Welcome to Mysteries to Die For and this toe tag. I am T.G. Wolf, and I'm here with Jack, my piano player and producer. This is normally a podcast where we combine storytelling with original music to put you at the heart of a mystery. Today is a bonus episode that we call a toe tag. It's the first chapter from a fresh release in the mystery, crime, and thriller genre. Today's featured release is The Taste of Datura by Lorenzo Petruzziello. Okay, we are going to do both the prologue and the first chapter today, so you all get a little extra treat. Prologue, Naples, Italy, December 1890. The crisp breeze trickled in from the bay, across the piazza, through the narrow buildings, and brushed along the back of the neck of the elderly German archaeologist. He was determined to have his afternoon walk through the Spanish Quarter. Being out of the hotel room and in the open air made him feel a lot better. He'll get back to Athens soon enough. Sure, he should have been celebrating the holidays, surrounded by his family and fellow archaeologists, but his health kept him from continuing his journey. A special gift he bought in Naples was ready to be picked up, so he wanted to get it and bring it with him to Athens. He imagined showing the piece to everyone waiting for him. If only his infection hadn't come back, he would have been allowed to take the ship to Greece and be in Athens for Christmas as he planned. But being stuck in Naples was a consolation, though. While he had spent some of the time in bed recovering, he had made the most of his time until the doctors could clear him to continue on his travels. For example, he was able to return to Pompeii and examine the ruins with more detail, something one could not do during the summer holiday with the influx of tourists crowding around. So he really couldn't complain. After all, he was absolutely fine staying in the comfortable, wondrous, and luxurious Grand Hotel with its incredible view of the bay. Not a bad place to recover from his lung infection. As Christmas was getting closer, the visits from the doctors had diminished. Of course, the old man understood. Doctors had families too. Besides, they did see improvement in his condition, and they said they would check on him after the holiday. When he was feeling better, he bathed and dressed and focused his time on visiting the artifacts in the Museum of Naples, including that excursion to the museum and ruins of Pompeii. On Christmas Day, however, the museums were closed, so the old man had agreed to participate in the hotel's abundant holiday lunch with other guests. The staff were kind enough to understand his condition and seat him alone at a private table so he didn't risk getting anyone else sick. After the meal, he decided to take a walk to the church. A young concierge procured the old man a driver as he helped him put on his coat and handed him his gloves and hat. As they walked across the front gardens and onto the main street along the bay, the old man greeted the staff and some of the other guests he had met while he was stuck recovering in the hotel. He looked at the water, took a deep breath, and allowed the crisp, salty air to fill his lungs, immediately feeling the renowned healing powers of the Mediterranean Sea. He turned away from the bay and crossed back to the car that was waiting to take him to the Piazza Plebiscito. It was not his destination, but he figured he'd take a walk to the church he had in mind. He was somewhat familiar with the area, but not enough to take himself directly to the church. It was not a problem, though. He knew he'd find it strolling around. He asked the driver to return in a couple of hours and then walked around the piazza onto Via Toledo. Halfway up the climbing street, he felt his body become weaker than his ambition. He forced himself to slow his steps as he continued his climb. He paused at the shop window and admired the Christmas decorations. Really, he felt his heartbeat racing. He needed to catch his breath. He needed to rest. He examined the miniature figurines displayed in the religious scene, finally presented with the miracle baby they had been eagerly awaiting. Ignoring the reflection of his old face staring back at him, he looked away and saw a clearing further ahead. Deducing it to be another piazza, he would rest at the cafe and sort out his route to the church. He gathered his strength and continued on. He reached Piazza Santa Clarita and looked around for any open cafe. He felt the space spinning as he turned and he turned. His head felt numb. The sounds around him were garbled, as if underwater. He blinked heavily before everything turned to black. Chapter 1. Cairo, Egypt, present day. Nick followed the transportation concierge out of the airport, down to a group of drivers who were chatting and smoking cigarettes while waiting for the next passengers. He stood by as the concierge called out to one of the drivers, a plump man with a stoic look. The concierge put his arm around the driver and whispered instructions. The driver kept looking back, glaring at Nick up and down. The concierge unfolded the document Nick had handed him, and after some resistance and some bribery, the driver relented with hands raised in surrender, taking the paperwork. The concierge nodded and put up his finger, appearing to give the driver a warning. The driver responded with a frustrated nod. The concierge then proudly turned back to Nick. "This is your driver," he said, leading Nick toward the vehicle. "He will take you straight to your hotel in Giza. He is instructed not to stop anywhere else. Do not pay him." He pointed to the copy of the receipt on his clipboard. "I just showed him the address and the payment receipt. He understands your fee has already been paid in full, and," he added, "it already included his tip. A generous one, too." "Thank you," Nick responded, but with some hesitancy. That driver just didn't seem at all happy about this particular drive. "Listen to me," the concierge said, leaning in and speaking softly and sternly, but still with a smile. "Do not give him any more money. He has already been tipped." Then he pointed to the small white van and indicated for Nick to board. Nick climbed onto the cushioned, bouncy seat covered in yellow velour stripes, which matched the thick yellow curtains drawn closed on all the vehicle windows. The evening sunlight still managed to make its way through, giving the interior of the van a warm orange glow. An open sliding glass window separated him from the driver. Nick turned back to the concierge and thanked him. "Farewell, Mr. Terenzi," the concierge replied, and then closed the van door. Before the door was completely closed, Nick was certain he saw the concierge's smile disappear as the driver squabbled with him one last time. The little white van bolted toward the flux of red lights heading away from the airport. Nick held onto his overly bouncy seat as the driver maneuvered his way through traffic onto the major motorway. Nick looked every which way and tried to register his surroundings, landmarks, signs, exit numbers, etc. It was his first time in Cairo, and with no time to prepare or research the city, he felt out of his comfort zone. The instructions were clear. Get to the hotel in Giza and deliver the bundle to a man named Mo. He would be found in the shipping and receiving office. Once the transfer was complete, it was suggested, strongly suggested, that Nick leave immediately and return to Naples. Nick didn't ask any questions. He just wanted to do what he needed to get his money. If he had known he was traveling to Egypt, Nick would have done more research, but all of this was arranged for him, and the trip itself did not allow time for touring. Once on the flight, he thought he would review the map of Cairo and Giza, but he still had no information on the routes or modes of transport to the city itself. All he knew was that he was supposed to meet a man named Mr. Khalil at the transport concierge desk, who would then arrange transport for him to the Giza Hotel. Nick looked up at the driver's rearview mirror and made eye contact with him, but the man looked away quickly. Nick tried to lock eyes with the driver again, but to no avail. He sat back and pulled his leather travel bag closer and carefully unzipped the brass zipper. Sitting on top of his pile of clothing, underneath a button-down shirt, was a valuable item wrapped in parchment. He unfolded the parchment and admired its contents. Nick felt a sudden force throw him to the side. He regained his bearings and realized the van had hit a pothole. He looked up at the driver's eyes in the rearview mirror. The man looked at him, offered a face of apology, and then focused back on the road. Communication breakthrough, Nick thought. He recovered the item in his in its parchment, zipped the bag closed, and looked back up at the mirror. The driver was fully concentrated on the barren road. Nick relented and turned his focus on the road ahead as well. My evening is in the hands of a stranger, he thought. Who is he? Does he know what I'm carrying? Is he involved in this? And why is he not happy about this drive? Can he be trusted? This could be it. If something sinister was to happen to me now, no one would ever know. Nick surprised himself. He had never thought like that before. He was thinking foolishly. Someone did know where he was. Sure, that someone probably couldn't care less if Nick didn't return, but they knew where Nick was. Well, they knew he was in Cairo, headed toward a specific hotel in Giza. But they didn't know he was currently in a tiny, bouncy white van driving away from the airport. Until Nick arrived at his destination, no one would know where he actually was. His ridiculous thoughts were taking over his mind. I could die right here and no one would know where the heck I am. I need to control this situation. I don't like this vulnerability. I'm in this driver's hands and he could do whatever he wants with me. Wait a minute. Why am I assuming the man would pull into some dark alley, rob me, and leave me to die? How did I become so dramatic, so scared? Nick tried to focus on keeping a cool composure, but his thoughts continued to spook him. If this driver wanted to mug me and throw me in a ditch, he could. If he wanted to drive me to some dark alley and beat me up, he could. If he was instructed to drive me to an abandoned warehouse and have me killed, he could. He is in control. Nick then reminded himself that he was sent here, but it was a damn warnings that raised the red flags. Don't trust anyone, were his contact's exact words. Don't trust the concierge. Don't trust the receptionist at the hotel. Speak very little. Deliver this immediately to Mo, then leave. Don't dawdle. Don't take time to join the sights. Don't even have a coffee. Just leave. What is all this? Nick had asked. This is the best way to get rid of it and get your money, the man had snapped back. Okay, okay. Nick relented, then switched to a gentler tone, hoping to calm him down and get more details. Why so cautious and concerned? I prefer not to tell you this, but, the man replied, there may or may not be word of a delivery. He looked like he had wanted to say more, but he had stopped and busied himself searching for a pen. What do you mean? Nick had pushed. It's nothing. The man didn't add more, and Nick didn't get any other details other than the address. The man's vague warning and his short tone had put Nick on guard. Enough, Nick thought to himself. Take control of the situation. What is wrong with you? He looked up at the driver's eyes in the rearview mirror again. This time, he held his glare until the man looked at him. Nick smiled, leaned forward through the divider, which was open, and spoke to him. Do you speak English? Nick said it loud enough to be heard over the man's radio. The man hesitated before responding and then shook his head, glanced again at Nick through the rearview mirror. Nick put his hand to his chest, nodded, and said his name. Ah, the man relaxed, smiled, and patted his own chest. Mehmet. Mehmet, Nick repeated. Parli italiano? It was worth a try. Mehmet adjusted his seat again, but shook his head no. He lowered the radio. Nick was relieved Mehmet began to show some interest, that his attempt at conversation had broken down the man's aloof and vaguely hostile attitude. Nick looked at him again. Mehmet was smiling more and seemed to show his consent, like a game or mystery to be solved, or that the two of them were going to solve together. Yes, it was like he and Nick had agreed to the mission of breaking down their language barrier. Nick proceeded by pointing out the window. Cairo? Yes, Mehmet said. So he did know some English, Nick assumed. As a driver, he had experienced many travelers or visiting scholars, so he must have been exposed to simple or at least some common English words. Or was he not a driver but some henchman hired to rob and kill me? See, Nick continued to encourage him. You do speak a little English. Mehmet cocked his head and smiled, but then shook his head as if to say, thank you, but no, I don't know English. Nick smiled again and sat back in his seat. Although the two of them couldn't really have a full conversation, he felt much more comfortable now that he was able to break the driver's wall and form some type of connection. Michael Jackson? Mehmet asked suddenly, sitting up with excited eyes in the rearview mirror. What? Oh, yes, Michael Jackson, Nick laughed. Yes, very good. So, Mehmet continued to use any English language word he knew or had previously heard, or possibly playing the act that he didn't speak the language. Nick frowned, not familiar with what he was trying to say. He encouraged Mehmet to speak it. So, the man repeated, making a drinking motion with his hand. Oh, Nick laughed. Soda. Yes, Mehmet exclaimed and laughed with him. Sota. Soda, Nick repeated. He wanted to continue to keep the man talking. Soda, Mehmet confirmed. Soda. Again, Nick wasn't sure if the man was pretending not to know English. Was this his game to fool some foreigner into believing whatever he wanted? How is it possible that a man working in the travel industry was not familiar with any foreign words? Not even the basic hello. He's a killer. No, he can't be. Why not? Nick pushed away his suspicion. He decided to just let the man be as he wanted and ended the soda conversation. Yes, soda. Mehmet's van approached some buildings, which Nick assumed would be Cairo City. The heavy traffic merged on a ramp leading to a major highway. Mehmet slowed down as they approached a busy square. Nick turned his focus out the window and saw people crossing the street haphazardly, not respecting crosswalks or cars not waiting for traffic signals, similar to what he often saw in Naples. A group of people approached the minivan, reaching into Mehmet's window and asking questions. Mehmet replied curtly, pushing their hands away from him and his vehicle. Nick was used to random people going up to cars at stoplights in Naples, but rarely did they reach inside so aggressively. Mehmet looked back at Nick and signaled for him to sit back behind the curtain. Nick followed his instructions, but his fear suddenly returned. What was happening? Why was Mehmet, the driver/killer, telling me to hide? Where were they? More people appeared to surround the van, trying to peek through the thick yellow curtains. Mehmet continued to drive slowly, moving closer to the ramp that led to the highway. Or maybe the town square? Through the curtain on his right, Nick could make out the busy street market. The driver kept shouting at the pedestrians on the left to do what Nick assumed was a warning to get out of their way. Soda? Mehmet turned back to Nick, pointing to the busy square. Mehmet seemed to want Nick to buy him a drink. Is this how he's going to lure me out and mug me and kill me? Nick remembered the concierge's words on repeat. The driver's instructed not to make any other stops. He looked at Mehmet, shook his head, smiled, and said, no. Yes, soda, Mehmet insisted and turned the vehicle into a dark alley behind the busy market. Nick felt his nerves quake. He thought about how the concierge had warned him not to stop anywhere until his final destination, and tried to determine why Mehmet would go against the instructions by pulling the van into a dark alley. All right, well, there you are. That is the prologue and the first chapter of The Taste of Datura by Lorenzo Petruzziello. So here is my review. It is an adventure. So Nick Terenzi purchased an intricate brass bracelet some time ago in Rome. He tried to sell it, and when he couldn't, he went to the black market. Now, the Egyptians, the Turks, a Spanish professor, the UN, and a sexy florist all want what Nick has. Nick doesn't know what's special about the bracelet, only that it's his key to staying alive. Bottom line, The Taste of Datura is for you if you like adventures building off mythology with a touch of paranormal. So what are the strengths of this story? The first strength is the composition itself. The Taste of Datura is listed on Amazon in the fiction literature category, and this fits as Datura is a little bit of everything. There is a mystery surrounding the bracelet, what makes it so special, why do major players want it. There is adventure as Nick loses the bracelet, fights to get it back, and then transports it to Cairo. There is mythology in the roots of the bracelet, drawing on both Greek and Roman stories. There is thrill as the few people Nick starts to trust start dying, and Nick knows that he's next. There is paranormal when Nick meets Laura, a medium whose vision shows her snippets of the bracelet's turbulent past. This story gives readers a lot to unpack. There's a lot of fun built in here. So Nick is a likable lead. He isn't a professional and he doesn't have, quote, people or resources. He has a decent amount of common sense, unless he's around one particular beautiful woman, which does get pretty funny. Laura is interesting in her own right, so her role is not traditional. She isn't a sidekick to Nick. She's not his partner, but she also isn't a love interest. The best word I could come up to describe her was a companion storyteller. As she takes the lead in her sections in a manner that is similar to what you would expect in a romance, but it's not a romance. She helps us as readers get a sense of the history. She does pass out a lot after she has her visions, and her accounts to Nick of what she sees are much less detailed than we get when we get her firsthand account of the vision. So all in all, we have a clearer vision, yes, that's very punny, than Nick does of what's going on. The pacing of the story is really good. It keeps the reader's attention. The author uses a few different techniques, including, as you heard, starting the story first in the past, then in the near future, before settling into the right now present. I appreciated the epilogue, which finished telling the 1890s story, giving us a satisfying end with the information that Nick will never have. The Napoli setting was affectionately written by someone who loves the area. The detail in the location, the food and drink, and the people reflect someone who spent some time there and not just done a little bit of research on Google Earth. So, you know, sometimes that can go too far, sometimes it's a little underdone. I thought this was done pretty well. There is a lot of discussion of the way food is served, and sometimes it is a little bit of a tangent to the story, but I thought it was delicious. So where did the story fall short of ideal? The logic does hold up. Now, in an adventure story, the logic isn't as core as in the mystery. It's more about the hunt or the chase. And similarly, Nick is more of an active hero than a driving force. You all know that I always look to see how much is our hero actually driving his story. Well, in an adventure story, a lot of times the hero is more reactive to what the bad guys does or have done, and that's definitely the case here. Nick's actions are true to his character, so nothing to pick on there. The man that you meet at the beginning is the same man you have at the end. There is one character whose actions, once you fully understand the full scope of the story, didn't quite hold true. And I thought it was interesting because some of the characters in the book comment something like, well, I don't know why they did that either. So it wasn't so much bad, it certainly was self-recognized, but I did think it was a little weak. I did think the editing on this could have been sharper. Little things jumped out as I was reading, such as Nick grabbing his left torso. As far as I know, people only have one torso. And on one of my Kindle pages, there were 16 sentences that began with the word he. These weren't big detractors of the story, but definitely something that some readers are likely to notice. And it is something that I think makes you appreciate what editing can do and how much we can maybe just take it for granted. So that's it. All in all, I really enjoyed this book. I'm glad I had the opportunity to read it, and it does make me want to go to Naples and explore the southern part of Italy. The Taste of Datura was released in April 2024 and is promoted by Partners in Crime Tours. It is available on Amazon, and the link is in the show notes. About our author, Lorenzo Petruzziello holds a degree in international marketing and economics with a background in global marketing for the entertainment and life sciences industries. He writes in his spare time, drawing inspiration from his frequent trips to Italy, his first dating back to his childhood. The Taste of Datura is Lorenzo's third book. So Partners in Crime promoted Datura They represent a network of 300 plus bloggers offering tailor-made virtual book tours and marketing options for crime, mystery, and thriller writers from around the world. Founded in 2011, PICT offers virtual book tour services for well-established and best-selling authors, as well as those just starting out with their careers. PICT prides itself on tailored packages for authors with a personal touch from the tour coordinators. For more information, check out their website, partnersincrimetours.com. Their link is in the show notes too. Join us next week for Season 7, Games People Play, and Death of the Dungeon Master by Erica Obey, where Dungeons & Dragons is our featured game. With that, I will turn to Jack and say, take us out.